So I first gave this talk many, many years ago, and then I didn't give it for a few years. And then as I saw the need growing and growing, after you hear people going out many, many times, and some have healthy attitudes, and some are yet to learn healthy attitudes. So as I said in the talk that I gave on Sudash Lishit, there are some topics which are crucial to hear at the right time, but if you're not going to hear them at the right time, then it's essential to hear it beforehand. And as a person gains a healthy perspective and a Torah perspective towards shidduchim at already this stage, towards dating now early on, then when the topic comes your way, hopefully it's already like a given and you're aware of those things. I won't talk about it now, I'll talk about it probably in the one on chinuch, but many years ago, when I was here in yeshiva, not yet married, there was a parsha sheet in English that used to come to yeshiva randomly from time to time, and there was an idea there from Rabbi Zev Lev, which I'll quote in the chinuch one. And I read it, and I said, that makes so much sense. Like, I'm definitely going to do that in my home. And it's something which I haven't heard anywhere else before or since, but it's something which has become a fixture in our home. And Baruch Hashem is like very stable in the home, this idea. And just because I read it then, before I had any other preconceived notions about how you raise children, then it kind of stuck with me, that idea. So that's just a model which I'm hoping to replicate here, where if we hear ideas now which are sound, like logical and grounded, and that can imbue a positive, healthy Torah attitude and an emotionally healthy attitude towards shidduchim, and it can save a lot of heartache for you and for the other side as well. So I'm going to do it in a way of a story. This story does not portray anyone real that you may know in your life. Names have been changed. It's just made up in order to just make the topic a little more interesting. So our hero of our story is called Yitzchak. And Yitzchak was in yeshiva, and a number of his friends have started getting married already. So he starts to feel a little lonely, and starts to feel like, why is everyone getting married and I'm not married? He's not sure if he's ready, but you know, he's obviously ready because all his friends have started to get married yet. So he decides that he's going to take that plunge as well, and he's going to start going on shidduchim. He's got a little bit of an insecurity issue, but he's not worried too much about that because he's sure that by the time that he gets married, then she'll solve that problem for him. But he's a bit worried that maybe she won't like him and that no one will like him, and he wants to get married and he starts dating. And the first girl that he goes out with is very special. Like everything he didn't think what he's looking for yet, but like if he were to think, then this is probably what he would think. And he's quite happy with how it's going. And as it starts getting better, he starts to freak out a little bit. And what does she think about me? And that's where his mind is going to, because he's not yet, you know, fully well built in of himself. So he starts to get very insecure. What does she think about me? His feelings of inferiority start to grow and grow. He gets more and more worried. And he was sure that when he got married or when he started dating, then those feelings would just go away. And like that's, you know, why you get married, isn't it? So she solves all your emotional issues. So he was sure that when he started going out with her, then like she would, like those feelings would go away. But it's not going away. It's only getting worse. And he starts thinking all sorts of thoughts like, she's too good for me, and why would she want me? And he's plaguing himself with all these doubts. Will she make me feel secure? Will she solve my loneliness? And he's not even aware of what he's thinking, but he's actually thinking very self-centered thoughts. I have issues. She's supposed to resolve them. Will she be good enough to resolve the issues that I have? That's where his mind is kind of going to. She, after a while, gets fed up with him because he's not so, you know, open, and he's not so, he's not conversing with her. He's just all caught up in his own thoughts. And she senses there's something unhealthy there. And he says to her, you may want to get married, but you're not ready for it. And she tells him, pretty impressive, I can understand why he felt inferior around him, but she tells him a vort that she once heard. And this is a good vort to know in future. If you ever, you know, that like younger brother or younger cousin who's not yet married yet, and they ask you for, say, a Dvar Torah at a Shev Ruchel, it's like, why are you saying a Dvar Torah? Like, what good advice do you have to say? So here's a standard one that you can just use. It's a very healthy one, very, very, very short, which everyone likes, short Dvar Torah at Shev Ruchel. And it has an important message. So in the Sheva Brachot, there's one, number 6, that says, Mesameh Chatan V'Kala. Chatan V'Kala. And then the number 7 says, Mesameh Chatan Im HaKala. What's the difference? Why is it first Chatan V'Kala, separately? Chatan, separately, V'Kala. And then another one is Chatan Im HaKala, together with what's going on. So she says this word, and it's probably for hearing from her wasn't so pleasant, but you know, in general, for us to know it is a good thing. She said to him, you know, first, the chatan has to be a chatan, and the kala has to be a kala. You have to work on yourself. You have to be emotionally secure. You have to check that you're ready first. And if you're ready, then you can go for it, because this was going quite well, but you're so insecure within yourself that we can't take the next step, really. So that's, then you can get to chatan ima kala. If you want to be together, you first have to perfect yourself. And once you work on yourself first, so that was a bit biting for him to hear that, but it was true. It really was true. So I want to give just some guidelines on how does someone know when they're ready. And this is huge. This is even before we're starting the dating itself. Here are a number of guidelines for a person to check in within themselves to see if they're ready. This is exciting. Welcome, Mr. Ram. There's a chair there next to Jonathan. Is there a chair there?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So, this list was taken from, there's a psychologist who writes every week in Mishpacha magazine, Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, and she once wrote an article about this topic, and I liked it very much, I copied it out. She said there are 9 factors that a person should check in within themselves to see for themselves if they're ready to get married. And if you should rate yourself 1 to 10 on these, and if you find that you're above 7 in all of them, then you know there's always what to work on. In every area, there's still what to work on. But if you're above 7, then you're stable. You're above average. You're in a good place. There's still what to work on. If you find yourself in any of these areas below 5, then you should pay attention to that before getting married, because it's an issue which will likely come up in marriage. So here's the list. So 1 on the list is being able to fulfill commitments and handle responsibility. If you're the kind of person who would give yourself more than a 7 out of 10 in that, if you say something, you see it through. You say you're going to be somewhere, you're going to be there. If you say you're going to take care of something, you take care of it. You might not be a 10, but if you're below a 5, then you're not ready to get married. That's one area that would need working on. Area 2 is you're able to manage money. You're able to live on a budget. You can set aside for savings. You give it tzedakah. You're not someone who's reckless with money. You know how to spend money and also how to save money, and you feel that you've got a healthy welcome giver. Is there another chair there? Is there a place? Yeah. On the couch? Yeah. That's 2. You're able to take... I mean, all of these, the bottom line is going to be responsibility, right? But there's just different areas of responsibility. So the first one is commitments. You're able to fulfill commitments. Your word is your bond. If you say you're going to do something, you see it through. 2 is managing money. 3 is anger. You're able to manage your anger. Like, it's not expected that a person never gets angry. We're not talking here about meeting someone who's the most perfect person. Right? It's likely that you'll be looking for the perfect person, but it's likely that you yourself are not yet perfect. So you're going to have to give up a little bit, you know, and it's fine. But on the other hand, if it's not in control, you're not ready to get married. If a person has a temper and is able to say, I get upset, but I have ways of managing it. I have techniques, I'm able to calm myself down, that's fine. But if a person gets angry and he gets out of control, he shouts and he hits and he gets wild, then that's inappropriate. That's an area which a person has to check in with themselves that he's ready for first. 4, and this is hugely important, for the wife especially, is the ability to be able to give of yourself to her. Are you able to have time to listen? Do you have the patience to sit and listen to someone when they want to share? Are you able to give support? Are you able to give empathy? Are you able to give compliments? All that area, that's something which you may not have really, you know, had a chance to experience on that level, but you still should be able to see it just amongst friends and amongst siblings. You're able to say gratitude. If you go to someone's house for a meal, do you find yourself, and even if it's not natural to you, but you say, this is important, you'll thank the hostess. You're able to appreciate things that are done for you. If someone compliments you, you compliment them back. You find like healthy interactions. You're able to, someone needs your time. You're able to sit with them and you're able to give them of your time. That's 4, ability to give. 5 is control of communication. Right, so the one is being able to give, that's one healthy thing. And there's a separate thing of having healthy communication. You're able to speak nicely, you're able to relate properly, you give them the opportunity to speak as well as you giving speaking. You're able to point out the good things that they do and notice it. You're able to have a healthy back and forth communication, that the communication flows. If you're able to speak to someone, there are some people who when they try to speak, it's very awkward and they're just waiting for you to say something. And if you go on a date with someone like that, if they go out with you, she asks you a question and you answer, you know, your one word answer. And then she's like, okay, so how many siblings do you have? 4. You're not going to get far in that manner. So just the healthy attitude to be able to speak. 6, which is different than 3, is managing your mood. Meaning, we spoke about anger beforehand, but this is also depression. Right, that you're able to get out of it. If you're upset about something, you're able to bring yourself out of it. We're not expecting here a person is perfect. It could be that a person has highs and lows. That's fine. That's normal. Right, but a person doesn't break down when they have a low. They don't stop functioning when they have a low. They're able to bring their mood back into balance. That's 6. 7 is cleanliness, neatness. Right, right. You can testify about your roommate right here, right? Whether they're ready to get married. But the ability, you're going to share space. If you're going to share space, it can cause a lot of friction. So the ability just to keep, and again, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be workable. You should give yourself above a 7 in this area. The second to last is health and hygiene. Again, it's an area of responsibility, but it's going to directly affect the person you're going to be sharing a room with. So if your hygiene is not yet up to scratch, like some people don't know like how many layers of dirt they have, you know, and like how long one could stay in the shower and what more could, you know, be benefited by doing that. And it's amazing how many layers there are. So the knowledge of hygiene, brushing teeth, like all those areas, it seems so simple and so obvious, but it's not always so obvious. It's just not always so obvious. And like being very serious, if a person has an issue with their breath, that they're aware of it and they're taking care of it, and those are simple things, but they're not always obvious to everyone. So, and the last one is the ability to negotiate. So negotiate that, like, you're going to have many opportunities in your family where you're going to want something and she's going to want something else. And right, we'll talk about this in the Shalom Bayit talk, which is the third one we're doing. The second one we're doing. Right, we're doing first Shiduchim, then Shalom Bayit, and then Chinuch, Abanim. That's the three that we're going to do. So the ability to negotiate, meaning to understand the other person's perspective, understand your perspective, to be able to say back their point of view. Like, I hear what you're saying is, da-da-da, and you show them that you care. No, thank you. If I do one, I'll take thanks. And you show them, that was good. That was it. Number four, ability to give. So yeah, the ability to be able to hear the other person's point of view, say it back, still state your view, even sometimes in an assertive way. You can be assertive, right? But at the same time, you're able to hear their perspective, give them what their view is, that you show them you cared, be willing to sometimes give it to them, but sometimes it's very, very important to you to make a stand on it, but without that causing tension, right? So that last point of being able to negotiate. So those are, that's a brief checklist. That's a brief checklist of 9 points, which a person should go through to see if he's emotionally ready, if he's stable, if he's secure, if he's taking responsibility, and only then he's able to then take that leap. One point that Yitzhak didn't realize over here was that he was doing it initially from peer pressure. And he wasn't ready. He hadn't ever heard about this list. But even if someone hasn't heard this list, you know, some of this is innate, you know, you can recognize that, yeah? And if not, then it's worthwhile, like, speaking to a friend. Do you think I'm ready? I speak to a close friend. Say, would you, be honest, be brutally honest with me now. Do you think that I'm ready to get married? And if the friend's honest, they'll say to you, like, in general, yes. But maybe there's one area I could just do with a little improvement. And then, great, you know, you're very happy to hear that. You should be open to be able to hear them. So, coming from peer pressure is an unhealthy reason to getting married. And Yitzchak's first mistake was that he was coming from an unhealthy place. He was coming from peer pressure. He hadn't checked in with himself if he was ready. He didn't even know really why he wanted to get married. He didn't even necessarily feel ready, just like everyone else is ready, so then I should be ready as well. Shouldn't that be what everyone's doing now because everyone's doing it? That's unhealthy. That's not authentic. It's not coming from him. He hadn't checked in with himself that it's ready. So that's point number one. Okay. Yitzhak takes a break. He has a lot to work on, you know. He actually got 3 or 4s on quite a few of these areas. And okay, it takes a bit of a while. He speaks to Rebbeim, he speaks to friends, he works on certain things. And when he's hovering in the 6s or 7s of those areas, he says, okay, no, 7%, I'm close. I feel like I'm ready to take the second round. He reads some books. He reads the famous recommended Kuntres HaChesed of Rav Dessler, which is certainly worth reading before getting married. He feels he's got like some hashkofas now about marriage. He's got like ideas about what it's about. He's willing to give to others. He feels he's more ready. And date 2. He goes out with the second girl who was offered to him, and it's good. He's happy and she's happy, and they go out, second time, third time, fourth time, and nothing's really happening. Meaning, okay, it was fine, it was pleasant, and now what? What happens now? So fifth time, and he says like, "Are you feeling anything?" And she says, "It's nice." Actually, very awkward, no? and so she says, "What about you?" He says, "I don't know. Like, it's okay." So he said, "Okay. So what do you want to do?" So he says, "I don't know. Like, maybe we should give it a break." She says, "Okay," and then that's it. And they push it off. And he's a bit unsure about what just happened there. Like, it was fine. It was okay. It was nothing great. It was nothing terrible. Like, what are you supposed to do with that kind of a relationship? But everything's okay and normal, but not amazing, then is that a sign that it wasn't meant to be? And he has a raya that it was not meant to be from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu saw Rachel, was mad in love with her, kissed her right then, and determined that he was getting married to her. And so he obviously won't kiss her because he's Shomer Negiah. But he wants that level where he's going to like feel that he wants to and has to hold himself back, and then it's going to be the right time. And he didn't feel that. So he goes to his dad, and he speaks it through with his dad. Baruch Hashem, he has a good relationship. His dad says to him, why didn't you speak to me earlier? We could have saved a good shidduch. So what do you mean, dad? Like, there wasn't that, you know, that special something. That spark. I don't know what it is. But like, whatever it is that I don't know what it is, it wasn't. I was waiting for the thing, and the thing didn't happen. So dad says, what thing? She says, dad, I don't know, like, okay. So, you know, I don't know if I should admit this, but dad, you know when you bought me the phone? Yeah, so there was a few months where I didn't have a filter on, and I watched some movies. And Baruch Hashem, like, nothing ever happened that was inappropriate. But like, one message that I got there about Shidduchim, right? Because I don't know, my Rebbeim never spoke about any yeshiva. So one message I got there is that like, when you meet, you know. It's like, you're just like, sometimes there's these sound effects in the background, and some stars, and you know. Like, that's it, that's how you know. Isn't that how you know, dad, isn't it? So dad is like shaking his head, and he's saying like, you didn't pass round one of maturity. Wasn't that before 9 points? It's just being mature. Now, isn't that on the list here of just being mature? Like, that's just not being mature. Like, that's not how things work. It doesn't work. Like, you have this blown away spark, amazing. So then he's confused. Like, so how do you know? So the dad says, listen, there's love and there's lust. They're two different things. There's this initial attraction that a person has, and there's different reasons why it happened. Usually why it happens is because in your past, you've probably met people that you like. And when you meet someone new who in some way triggers that person that you like, then you feel this affinity towards them. Because it reminds you of that person, reminds you of that person. People that you liked from the past, it reminds you of it. I'm not going to call you to task on this, but if you tell me that you've watched movies, then it's probably likely that it's triggering people who are like not even real people, people who don't even ever never really existed and aren't even real, but it's triggering some memory of that type of a person and you feel this, oh, wow, it's amazing. Why? Because it triggered something new. But one fight in marriage and all that goes flying out the window because it's not real. Anything that comes quickly goes quickly. Real love tells the father. And I wish we would have had this conversation also earlier. You know, it would have saved a lot. For the father's perspective as well. It goes both ways. The child has to ask and the parents and the rabbi have to share. But real love is something which you don't get at first sight. That's a misnomer. When you build and you invest and you give to a person a lot, you start to build an effect for them. Which, by the way, is why most people find that their parents love them more than they love their parents. And especially you feel it when you have kids. And then you can tell the difference, you know? So like, I appreciate my parents and I'm thankful to them and I'm grateful to them and everything, but the way I love my kids, you cannot compare of how like I feel towards my parents. I have good feelings towards my parents, but it's not love. And how I know my parents love me is like a different world. It's a different world. Why is that? Why do parents love the kids? It should be the other way around. It should. I'm telling you, as a parent, I come home every day and there's such a mess on the floor, especially before Baruch Hashem. I don't know, like, they know Bayacham's coming, pour everything out. And like, why am I picking up the mess of little kids? Because some of them are too young to pick it up themselves. So then it becomes my job. And it's such a tircha. And today I was sitting with two of the kids trying to do homework at the same time and I fell asleep on the table. I'm trying to juggle everything, it's so hard. Right? It wears you out. And they get food, get clothes, get outings. Logically, it should be that the kids love the parents more than the parents love the kids. But the formula is giving causes loving. When you invest in someone, the more you invest in them, you've given over to them, you're almost giving a part of yourself to them. And because you naturally love yourself, as it says, it's a given that you love yourself. It's like built in, right? In order to love someone else, you first have to love yourself. But since it's a given that you love yourself, so then by investing in someone, then you love them too, because that's someone who you've invested in. You feel like it's a part of you. So love doesn't come from first sight. And our whole idea of the spark and the click is all false. It's not true. I'm not saying it never happens. It can happen. But it's not a way of judging whether it's a good match. Real love comes with years. The more you invest in your spouse and you give to them and you invest in them, just like with your kids, the more you invest in them, then it develops slowly but surely real love. And you know, it's a terrible thing when a person says, my wedding was the best day of my life. That's terrible. And then from then it was downhill. Like, well, what happened after that? It's supposed to be, it's the beginning. The beginning. So my wedding was the beginning of the best stage of my life. That you can say, you know, and then it builds and builds and builds from then on. That's amazing. It shouldn't be the best day of life. That's terrible. So Yitzchak realizes that wasn't a question of maturing so much, really. To be honest, it wasn't mature. It was just perspective. And some of the things that you need to be successful in Shidduchim are just a mindset. Just a mindset. It's not about maturity so much. It's just about understanding how things work. And as you grasp how things work and how they're supposed to work, and you have a healthy perspective, you're able to like take a next step forward. One thing that Yitzchak was a little bothered by, though, was attraction. Because where does attraction play a role in all of this? Are you supposed to be attracted? Is that a good thing? Are you supposed to be Horesh min ha'olam, and like not look, and not, like, where does that whole story fit in? So this is a little more awkward for his father to answer. Some parents are more comfortable, some are less. It was awkward for Yitzchak to ask because he knew that it wouldn't go well. But he had a Rebbe that he remembered, Dafka Rebbe from high school, that, you know, sometimes you have Rebbeim at different stages in your life who you say, like, that's a Rebbe I'm going to go back to, you know, when I have a question. He Dafka Rebbe from high school, and even though, like, he hadn't spoken to that Rebbe for a while, but was really bothering him, this question, like, the whole idea of attraction and a spark, and so he wanted to go ask that Rebbe. So the Rebbe said to him like this. The Rebbe said, it says in the beginning of the second parak of Kedushin, that you have to look at the girl before you get married. Once. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, maybe you'll look at her, and you won't like her, you'll be off-put by her, and then you won't be able to love her. So, the Gemara is telling you that you have to not be upset by the way they look. You can't be off-put by them. But it doesn't say anywhere, in any form, there's a criteria of her being attractive to you, that you feel a sense of lust towards her, or desire. It doesn't say that. Now, I'm now adding more than what the Rebbe from high school added, that this topic is very personal. And just from my personal experience of different chassanim and boys that I've spoken to over the years, there are some people who this topic is very, very important to them. And they're not even proud. They're not proud of it. They're not happy with it. But they just find that that's true. And they find that when they meet someone, even if she may be normal, fine looking, but for them, they just can't take it. And they're sometimes embarrassed about saying that. Right? Because, like, what's wrong? Like, she's not ugly. She's fine. She's normal. Right? But for them, it really bothers them. And they just look and they say that it's hard for them to look. So that's the definition of off-putting. It doesn't have to be that other people find them off-putting. And it could be that objectively they're fine, but if you find yourself uncomfortable in the situation, then you should not continue with it. Maybe you can overcome that at some point, and it does happen that the more you meet someone, the more you find yourself attracted to them because their personality starts to shine through. And I'll just add in here that it's quite unhealthy to look at a picture ahead of time. Because a picture doesn't give the chain of the person. There's a chain that a person, when they smile, when they talk, they give over. And when you look at a picture, it's guaranteed that it's been photoshopped. Guaranteed. But it also doesn't express the truth of who the person is. So I would recommend not asking to look at a picture. And just meeting once. Sometimes it could be worthwhile, because if you know that it's a topic which really bothers you, then it may be worthwhile just to look, just to rule out. But sometimes it's unfair, because it could be that from the picture you would think not. But when you meet and you start to relate to them, you suddenly find yourself feeling comfortable with the way they look. I'm not going to say filled with desire. That's not our goal. But you find yourself comfortable, and that's the goal. Nice looking enough that you can invest in the relationship. And when you invest in the relationship, with time they become more and more attractive. If there's something off-putting at the beginning, it's hard. Because then there's this, like, I have to overcome something to feel connected. That's a harder challenge. But as long as nice looking enough that you can just be together, enjoy each other's company, then the attraction grows and grows and grows as you start to invest in the personality. Yitzchak, like, that made sense to him. That made sense. He wasn't in the category of people who, like, need her to be beautiful. It was important to him, but not so important. He could accept that. The idea that she could be good looking enough and with time, it was important to him that she was good looking, but it wasn't so important to him that he said it has to be ahead of time good looking. It was defined. It made sense to him that as long as it's okay, he'll invest in the relationship and he's willing to, like, see how that develops, and hopefully the attraction will come with time. So, Baruch Hashem, you know, Hashkafic perspective is that everything you go through is another life lesson. Right, these aren't challenges, these are growth points. So every time he's meeting someone new, he's learning more of things. And Baruch Hashem, so are we along the way. Okay. He's ready now. I mean, between time 1 and 2, he needed a break because he had a lot to work on. Between time 2 and 3, he didn't need a break. It was just a perspective. He changed his perspective. He's got a healthy mindset now. He's ready to go out with number 3 pretty straight away. Now, number 3 was a disaster. It didn't take any time to find out that it wasn't appropriate. From the beginning, they're fundamentally incompatible. Absolutely. In many ways. First of all, in just technical ways. He's going to sit down and learn long term, and her role is to support him. He's a Talmud Chacham, no? Right? Isn't that the role of a woman? And who wouldn't want to support a Talmud Chacham like him? Does she know how many Masechtas he's learned? I mean, does she appreciate that? Like, of course she'd want to. That was one thing. And the other thing was, like, he's dead set on staying in Eretz Yisrael. And she's in the middle of a degree in Chutz Laretz. Like, she can't leave. So, who is the brainchild who set that up? You know? Like, what were you thinking? Like, those are two points, which, like, she wants someone who's going to support her because she has a lot of jewelry she needs to buy. Right? And she's got a lot of places she needs to go and coffee she needs to drink. And that's her mindset. And he's got, so, like, that's something which, way ahead of time, you could have discovered. Right? It wouldn't take any like chokhmah just to ask, what's your general plan in life? What's your general plan in life? Where do you want to live? Right? And then he realized like how important it is to make sure that you've done your background research. Because you can save so much heartache when you are introduced to someone who it's not matzim for an obvious reason, something that anyone can know ahead of time. So I just gave two examples which are so obvious that anyone in the world would know, but I want to add one more point. There's very individual red lines that everyone may or may not have, or may not be aware of, but you find out pretty quickly. And, you know, there's no rule on this, but you'll discover it. I'll give you my personal one. And then I'll tell you one of the boys that I learned with and how interesting it was for him. One, not at all, that I don't at all, like, doesn't resound with me at all. So for me, something which is very innately who I am, like my essence, is speaking in a way which is not sarcastic and not cynical and always like saying things which are growth orientated. Right? You can say neutral things, right? But not making fun of things. I can't take late sunders. Like, it really eats me up. And when I speak to someone who does that, I'm able to just like let it pass. I don't get frustrated, but it's hard for me to respect someone like that. And for me to meet someone who would like make fun of everything and make fun of other people and make sarcastic jokes all the time, for me, that would just be a red line. That's my red line. For me, how do I know that? Because of how I relate to my friends. Right? It doesn't have to be that you start dating someone to find this out. The type of things that are obvious red lines to you, you will know already. You will know already. It's things that you generally interact with. They frustrate you, they irritate you. Everyone has their pet peeve, your red line. I was accompanying a boy who learned here in Cambie Avenue, and he says to me, I was talking through with him about like what his ideals were, what his criteria was. He says to me, Rebbe, I don't want this like sweet, pure girl. I want someone who I can make fun of. And she laughs along with me. Like I don't want to be sensitive. I want someone who like she'll make fun of me and I'll make fun of her. And that will be like our joke. That's who I am. That's what I was like laughing to myself. I was saying like, that's the exact opposite of who I am. And he did it in a ruach tova. Like he was a good person. That's his way of humor. And that's who he was. And it was so interesting because his red line and my red line were opposites. Exact opposites. A different boy, his red line was cleanliness. He was a clean freak. Like when he would come to the Beis Medrash in the morning, like he would, before he like touched his tefillin, he would like organize his forum and organize his forum with the guy next to him and like move things away and something on the floor, he'd put it aside. Like it took him a good like, you know, longer than it takes me to put on tefillin, it took him to like set up his table. And I thought, now that's something which he didn't choose, but it's obvious. Man, for him to live in a home of a woman who leaves things on the floor, right, it would eat him alive. It would be a red line for him. So as well as the obvious things which even an external person could identify, meaning you want to live in Israel, you want to live in Chutz Laretz, which you can tell ahead of time, find out ahead of time, you should learn and identify, which you probably know already just from your interactions with friends and siblings and everything, you should identify what for you is a red line. What for you is something you would not be able to respect someone who is or isn't, whatever it is. Fill in your personal blank. You may not have one of these. You may be a super easygoing person and not have anything like this. That's fine. But then you may then later on discover that you have one. Right? And then you just wasted your time, right? Because you went through a lot of heartache. So anything you can discover ahead of time. So that was point number three. Do as much research as you can, which is logical. You don't have to check out what age she toilet trains. You don't have to check out, does she have a great auntie who once went to the movie? Like, there are certain things which are like, okay, it's fine. And I really want to point this point out. It's very important to only look at the person. It's not important to look at the family. And I want to emphasize this because it's different to what Chazal say, and I want to explain why it's different today. Chazal say there are two factors that you should look at when you're looking for a person. Number one is to look at her brother. Number two is that you should look at her to see that you love her. What's the prototype of those two things? Number one is intellect. Right? It's likely that the way her mother raised her brother is the same model she's going to use to raise her child. That's the model she saw. In her home, the woman raises the sons like this. Right? That's what Chazal is saying to you. So you also, so you're going to marry this woman and she's going to raise your sons like her brother was. So Chazal say, look at the brother. And that's an intellectual way, like a logical way of seeing how your kids may turn out. That's point number one. Number two is more emotional. Do you feel connected? That's the second point. Rav Steinman said, that doesn't apply nowadays. It only applied in a time when the family raised the child. Today, it's not the family that raised the child. Today, there are so many factors that are involved in raising a child. The community has become much broader. The influences are beyond control. And the way that her sibling was raised is not a direct result of the parents. It's almost miraculous. It's almost miraculous if it's only the parents' influence that are what causes the child to grow up the way he does. Because there are so many external factors. And therefore, Steinman said that line in Chazal, you should not take as a way of judging that girl. And I can tell you that personally, it frustrates me tremendously when I get phone calls from Shadchanim about boys who have learned in this yeshiva, and they start asking those types of questions. Because I know the boy, I know where he is, to the degree that I know, you know, and I can share who, you want to marry this person. I will tell you as much as you want that's relevant about this person. I don't want to tell you about their parents and their grandparents and their childhood and what they did in other places. It's not relevant. It's not relevant. This is who they are today. This is who you're marrying. Now, there may be exceptions of things that are very important. There may be things behind the scenes which the person hasn't worked on, and they may come up later, and then it may be relevant. And then in that case, I would discuss with the boy to see for him where he's holding in that topic. Is that something which he's worked through and he's in a good place now, or is it something which he's just denying? If he's denying it, then it's important to bring it up, because it may come back. If it's something that he's spoken to people about, he's worked through it, he's in a good place, and you can speak it through with him, it's a good place. It's not relevant. So, we are encouraging, point number three is, we are encouraging doing research, but only the type of research which is relevant. Fact-finding about what their plans and goals are, hashkafically, if they're roughly on the same page, and red lines, any red lines that there are that would mean that it obviously wouldn't work out. Beyond that, just meet and see how it flows. Yeah.
I think it's important with regards to looking at the family. Do you think maybe it's important to see if she's got a strong relationship with her parents and her siblings? Because then that will affect your relationship with your in-laws.
So I'll say it like this. It's especially interesting in divorced families, because there they don't have a model of a healthy, regular family. It's not so important how they relate to their family as do they have a model of a family which they relate to in a healthy way. It could be they don't have a good connection with their parents, because it could be their parents or people it's very hard to connect to. That doesn't mean it's a problem with them. But it could be that they have some foster family which they have a really good relationship with, and they have a good model of what a family is like. So it's not so important so much where they're holding in relationship with their parents. It's important to see that they have a healthy attitude towards that whole topic. That they know what their boundaries are might be a more important topic than they have a close connection. You know, that depends on the situation then. So it is important to discover, like, are they in an emotionally healthy place regarding the topic of family? It's not so important to ask very specific questions like, how's your relationship with your father? How's your relationship with your mother? Because that could be a very sensitive topic. Maybe the father's someone they just can't relate to. And he's a narcissistic, and like anytime they try and relate to him, it only goes bad, and it's healthy that they stay away. And the good thing that they've learned is to put boundaries there. You know, you don't know. But the fact they have a good model of a family is important. Is that, yeah? So, there was a bit of a problem here, because although we mentioned before that Yitzchak learned about what it means to have a good attitude towards looks, but it just so happened that this girl number three was exceptionally looking. Very beautiful. And she wants to go back to Chutz Aretz, and he wants to stay in Israel, and she wants someone who's going to support her. She has, you know, a lot of things in her bucket list, and he wants to have full-time learning, but he's starting to reassess because she's very beautiful, and he's saying to himself that that's not what everything is, and there's more things in life that are important, but somehow he's rationalizing the Torah in Derech Eretz is a phrase that someone once said, and in the Ketubah is something which you sign that you're going to support them, and like all these kind of other rationales, which may be very true, but they weren't things he was thinking of before he met this girl. suddenly are getting tremendous weight. And he says to her, you know, I was thinking maybe we should carry on. And she said, but you said you want to stay full-time learning. He said, it doesn't have to be. He says, but you said you want to stay in Israel. She says, yeah, but like, I once heard that someone says that like, that if you go to Chutz Aretz and you have the plan to come back and you teach someone else Torah, then it's as if like, where you are is Eretz Yisrael. Like, those steps that you take, I heard that. So she looks at him and she says to him, look, anyone who is willing to give up everything they fundamentally believe in is a nobody. And I'm not interested in marrying a nobody. And she dumps him. And that was that. And when he was out of it, he caught himself and said, what happened to me over there? There was a rushness that like overtook me. And like, I was blinded by her looks. And I was willing to forego on things that are really important to me. And he was, that was a real shock to him, actually. It really was a shock to him. Her line, this is the second painful line he's heard from a girl, right? First is the Baal Torah. So it builds you. Anyway, this time, number four, Yitzchak is determined to make it work. He's emotionally mature. He's got a healthy attitude, both towards looks and also towards not looking for a spark. He's done his background research. He thinks it's going to go well. So, they go on date number four. And he's looking to see, and this is basically what he's looking for, are they compatible? Does he enjoy spending time with her? Does she enjoy spending time with him? And they're going out, and he suddenly gets the realization that he's never actually talked to a girl before. And it's a bit awkward, because like, what interests girls? So he knows all what he knows in yeshiva. That's not going to go very far. And he also has a little bit of interest in sports. That's not going to go very far. What do girls talk about? Right? Well, actually. And he knows that he has a sister who talks about recipes and makeup. But, like, that's not interesting to him at all. So he starts like doing the technical talk at the beginning. It's always easy at the beginning. So how many siblings do you have? But then after that, one or two kind of standard questions. He's a bit like, so where do you want to go? And, you like cream cheese. Great. And it's really awkward. He doesn't know what to do exactly. So he's not open enough with her just to say, I'm really awkward about this. And like, do you want to like lead the conversation? Because that would, you know, put him in a quite even more awkward position. So he just kind of finishes up the day quickly and says, right, that was really awkward. What are you supposed to talk about on a date? He never got like to a girl who there was no issues with before, and now there's no issues. So what do you do? Like, he's not sure about all this. So he goes to speak to his sister. That was good. Baruch Hashem for siblings. I'm an only child. I didn't have this experience, but it's like wise of Hashem, you know, to make families with boys and girls. In for those who have, not everyone has, but for those who have siblings who are of the opposite gender, it's very healthy. Like to take advice from them. Like what do girls take interest in? But on the other hand, he doesn't want to talk about girly things. Right? He's not going to talk about like how she does her hair. It's just not, it's awkward. Yeah? And so he doesn't like, he's not, so should she talk about her things? Should she talk about his things? Is there somewhere in the middle? Like, is there something which interests boys and girls? He remembered that he once heard about this book called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And like, he's believing in it more and more. Like, they're just two different planets. Like, what is good? Anyway, so his sister tells him that, you know, what a girl really wants to hear is that you're taking an interest in what she's talking about. And she tells him a secret. She says, the truth is, you don't have to talk very much. She'll do most of the talking. All you have to do is just show her that you're listening and you're taking an interest. Now and then just say, And that's really all a girl's looking for, like, really. If she asks your opinion, you know, say your opinion. But otherwise, she probably just wants to talk. And that's all you really have to do. So he says, that's too good to be true. It can't be. And so anyway, he says, I'll give it a try. So they go out the second time. And they start talking about their elementary schools that they went to. And he says, oh, so how is like a school for you? And she starts talking about this teacher and that teacher. And he's like, And he was like, oh, yeah. And how is it for you? He goes, yeah, like also. She goes, oh, good. And I'm in my second grade. And she keeps going. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, you don't have to talk. You can just facilitate her talking. Right? Anyway, what cracked him up was at the end of the conversation, she said, "You know, you are one of the best conversationalists I've ever been out with." And he went back to his sister, said, "That was brilliant. It worked so well." But then he's thinking, but how do we know that we're matim? Like, I'm learning a lot about her, but who says that we're good for each other? Like, who says that we're on the same page about anything? Either way, that was a lesson for life, right? He now knows that you don't have to keep the conversation. You can easily keep the conversation going by not talking, just having the right noises at the right time. So, at the second or third day, he realizes that, although he does know a lot about her, kind of, excuse my language, but petty talk, but he wants to get a little more deeper and understand like who she is and what she is. So he starts to bring up more intense conversations. Like, what? How do you see your home and how do you see your future? And it doesn't have shkafic questions, which he wasn't sure about and he wanted to bring up. And because they'd already felt comfortable with each other on the first couple of dates, then he was willing to do that. She was also comfortable to do it. So he starts bringing up more kind of intense. So he didn't talk about the heavy things on the first couple of dates. He first wanted to see if they can feel comfortable in each other's company. And it worked, Baruch Hashem. Actually, now and then she felt guilty that she was doing all the talking. So she was mitgaber, and she asked him, "What do you think?" And he spoke for a couple of sentences. And then she added to what he said, and it went well. Anyway, so then he brought in his conversation, his more intense conversations, his more important things. And Taki was very surprised that it was really online. Like really, she had this perfect balance of, on the one hand, like wanting to support Torah, but she wasn't extreme. Like it wasn't that like the kids have to be throwing stuff. Like it was like normal. Like and they had a similar like types of music they like listening to, and they enjoyed spending time in the same way. One thing he found a bit awkward, actually really awkward, was sitting in a hotel lobby. Why did people suggest doing that? Like, it's the most awkward thing. There's nothing going on around you, right? Except for the other couple and the other couple. You're looking, they look like they're getting on well. We have nothing more to say. And there's nothing going around you. Like, and how many times can you order another coffee? Like, and then you're looking, staring right at each other. Like, so every moment of silence is magnified 10 times. And it's like the most awkward thing to do. So after... this was a date beforehand, yeah, that he realized how awkward this was. So he suggested, and it's a bit not mukubal, but it's so much better, can we walk outside? Can we just walk outside? And it was perfect. First of all, walking outside, you don't have to look face to face the whole time. So you can have silences from time to time, and it's fine. It's like natural. Like when you walk with a friend, like you don't talk non-stop the whole time. You're not looking at the other's face, like, is he talking now? Is she going to talk? You can have natural walking. That's point number one. From a halachic perspective, it's better. You're not staring at them if you don't need to. Right. And there's lots of things going on all the time as you're passing these, which can generate conversation. Like that shop, I once went there and they overcharged me. And like you have all your stories that can go along the way and you can find things. You meet people that don't meet people on the way. I got a phone call from my cousin. When we got engaged, I got a phone call from my cousin who said to me, we knew you were going to get engaged. Then how do you know? He said, like, we were there, parked by the red light, and you walked right in front of us. You walked across the zebra crossing at the traffic light, right in front of us. And we were going to honk you, but we thought, it would be awkward if we do that. So walking is the best way. It's the best way. It depends on the temperature, obviously, right? But it's the best way. You just walk. Miss Skinner, my wife. First date was like minus temperature. We were in Yerushalayim, and I said like, "Let's get an iced coffee." And I bought iced coffees and walking outside, and she was shivering. She was shivering. Like, this is not good. Like, this is not a good thing. So, but there was nowhere to go. Like, I didn't want to take her to her hotel because I was principled against this. So we just walked more. I said, "Let's walk faster," and then we just walked faster. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, my lack of sensitivity was overcome by my pathetic sense of humor, and we got past that one and went better the next time. Anyway, so he was walking. They were walking together. And the conversation's going well. And he's feeling more comfortable. And he asks some more intense conversations. And it goes very well. And then he starts to freak out. Oh my gosh, this is it. This is it. Man, I've done everything. I'm ready. She's ready. We're comfortable. We're comfortable with each other. We're talking comfortably. Hashkafically, I've asked all the things that were important to me. And we're on the same page. I don't feel I'm ready to get married. And he freaks out. And he's not going to call it off because it's perfect. Like it's all going so well. But on the other hand, like he cannot see himself committing. He just can't see it happen. Maybe there's someone else. Isn't there a phrase like that? There's many fish in the sea. How do you know this is the right one? Maybe there's someone else who's even better. How are you supposed to know? He gets really nervous and anxious. Like, how do you know how to commit? Anyway, she hints to him that she feels ready. And that makes him freak out 10 times as much. And he goes to his mother and he says, like, how do you know when you're ready? How do you know? So she says to him, I don't know, I just knew. But maybe you're getting like so anxious about this, maybe you should speak to someone. And they phone Dr. Meir Wicklund. And Dr. Meir Wicklund is a Froom psychologist in America. And he's counseled a lot of couples in these topics, and he has Eitzah Tovah. So 10-minute conversation is resolved. 10 minutes. He says, tell me, do you have trouble making decisions in other areas? He says, are you kidding me? I spend about 15 minutes every morning which color socks I'm going to wear. And the choice of which yeshiva to go to paralyzed me. In the end, you know what I did? I went to my Rebbe. I said, Rebbe, you choose. Whatever you say, I'm going to do. And what did he do? He said, like, he's not going to choose. So I flipped a coin. That's how you chose yeshiva? Yeah, I couldn't decide. So Dr. Meir Wicklund said to him, so, you know, this is not an issue with the marriage. This is an issue with decision making. And therefore, there's no issue with the marriage. So wait, let me just ask you, is there anything in her that's a concern? Like, is there something in the relationship which you're concerned about? So like, what do you mean, for example? Maybe there is. Maybe there's a concern. What do you mean by that? So like, no, like, did you see that she has a temper that you haven't like clarified if she has temper? No, she's fine. And hashkafically, have you asked like the major questions you want to ask? So, yeah, no, I've asked many questions. And let me ask you, do you feel that at this point, you basically know everything there is to know? Begadol. Meaning, you know, maybe you don't know, like, that when she was 16 and then she went on a trip with friends and, like, she got up to some mischief there, and you'll be surprised about that a little bit. But like, you know, Beseder, in general, you know everything there is to know. You wouldn't be surprised about anything big. So, yeah. No, we know each other well enough. Like, I don't think there's anything now that she would still tell me which is, like, a major thing. So he says, so you can go. You can get married. He said, but how do you know? So he says, it's the same as your socks. What do you do eventually with the socks? Says, eventually I just close my eyes and I just grab one. He says, do the same here. Close your eyes and say, I'm ready. And then that'll be it. Or the same, it'll work. If there's a real concern, you shouldn't let it pass. If there's a real concern, you have to clarify it. You shouldn't make a decision if you don't feel shalem. When there's something you can still clarify, and still look into. But if you've decided everything there is to decide, then you can go through with it. That really calmed him. He felt a lot more reassured from there. But it didn't answer his question about maybe there's someone better. I mean, it did answer his question about, like, it's hard for me to make decisions, but what about the fact there's maybe someone better? And that was bothering him, that thought. And he knows it's not so logical, but it was bothering him. And it was still holding him back from making the final decision. Maybe there's someone better. So there's a rabbi in Bnei Brak called Rabbi Simcha Cohen. He's an expert on the topic of Shalom Bayis. He has tapes back in the day, which were the Shalom Bayis tapes that every couple listened to. Like they, and they really have very clear foundations that really make a strong home. And he went, and his yeshiva was nearby there, so he went to speak to Rav Simcha Cohen. Rav Simcha said to him, you know, Bemet, it's all a farce. So what's all a farce? He said, dating. So what do you mean dating's a farce? He says, do you think you know her? He says, I think I know her. He says, you don't know anything of her. So really, you don't know anything. I know, we've been meeting, we've been going out, it's going well. He says, no, like, I'm not saying she's doing anything wrong, but she's putting on her best side. I tell me, are you putting on your best side? Of course, yeah. Are there things that you would be a little embarrassed that she'll find out? Yeah. Are you going to tell her eventually? Probably. But are you going to tell her now? No. It's a mekachtaus. Why don't you tell her? It's not major things. It's things that she'll probably forgive me for. Like, she won't make a big deal about it. So she's probably doing the same. It's not a bad thing. It's a healthy thing. You have to show. That's it. You're supposed to show your best side. Not something which is crucial. You know, like if she has some major medical issue, then she probably asked the postdoc and she brought it up at some point, right? She has to bring it up before you get engaged. But maybe there's something there which you don't know about. Let me tell you something else. Do you think that if you feel that it's perfect now, there's not going to be any friction? Do you think there's someone who's more perfect for you, there's not going to be friction? Every man and every woman are different. Every marriage is not so much about being perfect. It's about making it perfect. And Rav Simcha Bunim said a line, which actually comes from my mother-in-law. So let's move aside. This is my mother-in-law's line. This line, Kapshuta has saved marriages. My mother-in-law is a marriage counselor. This line has saved marriages. This one line. My mother-in-law's line. I don't know where she got it from. She doesn't know where she got it from. I think she made it up, probably. Anyway, she said, It's not about making the right choice. It's about making the choice right. That line has saved marriages. Because you go out, and one small thing goes wrong, or when you're already engaged, or when you're already married, and some small thing goes wrong, you say, oh, it was a mistake. You see, if I would have known that, it's a problem. Ah, that's it, throw it in. And we live in a generation where we don't fix things. There was once upon a time a generation where they darned socks. Yeah, you had a hole in your sock, you fixed it. Nowadays, we throw away socks. There used to be a generation where the people fixed phones. Nowadays, the phone's broken. How much does it cost to fix? It costs $20. How much is a new phone? $200. I'll buy a new one. You can fix it. No, yeah, but it's got a broken. Once one thing's broken, you know what's going to go next. I'll buy a new one. We live in an era of chad pa'ami. Everything's chad pa'ami. Even marriages are chad pa'ami. Disposal. No, things just, it's so easy to just say, wasn't good, chuck it out, next one. That's the era we live in. It's a mindset of our culture. Something goes wrong, it's a mistake, forget it, move on. If you have the mindset that it's about a right choice, then that means there's a right choice and there's a wrong choice, and this is the wrong one. I'll look for the next best one. And it's really sad what I'm saying now, but what often happens is that people get divorced, they get married again, they find the exact same issue in the next marriage, and they realize, oh, it wasn't about that person being right and this person being wrong, it's about something that needs to be worked on. And they work on it with the second marriage. And then it works out. But it's not because the second marriage is better. The first marriage probably could have been better. But they just didn't have the mindset of working. It's not about making the right choice. It's about making the choice right. So that was my mother-in-law. But back to Simcha Bunim. So he said, that, so the truth is, Lamaisa, if you invest in the marriage, and you both have, and this is important, if you both have a growth mindset, meaning she's not stubborn in her ways. He said, but what should I look for then? If you're saying that I can marry anyone, so what should I look for? So then you should look for someone who's not stubborn, not stuck in their ways, but someone who's willing to grow. Because who you're marrying today is going to be a different person to who you're going to be married to in 10, 20 years. You're both going to develop. You're both going to grow. You need to look for someone who's growth orientated. They're willing to grow, not someone who's very stubborn. So just in brackets, when I was going out with my wife, I wanted to check this point out. So I didn't know myself like where my future lay. So I said to her, and I was honest, I meant this authentically. It wasn't like a test. I was honest. I said, this is not my plan right now, but if it would happen that I would feel that for the family and it's best to take a Haredi track, right? I'm in the Dati Lumi world, my wife also was, but if I would feel this is what's best for the family to take a Dati Lumi track, then would you be willing to do that? And she said, this is the perfect answer, she said, right now I'm uncomfortable with that, that's not the world I know. But as long as it's a discussion and we think it through together and it's a mutual decision and it makes sense, then yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I want to do it now, but as long as we're working through it together, then yes, perfect answer. Perfect. It's someone who has their own opinion, they have their own hashkafa, they have their belief, but at the same time, they're not like, only this way, otherwise no. Because that type of a person, as you grow, they'll stay there. And you'll grow and they'll stay there. You'll grow, they'll stay there. And then you won't be married to the person you want to be married to. You need to look for someone who's... I'm not saying someone who has no opinions. Right? They should have opinions. They should have a personality. They should have... But at the same time, they're not rigid, stubborn, their way or the highway. It should be someone who you will be able to grow with. That was very reassuring. The two things together, what Dr. Meir Wickler said about, if decisions are hard for you, you don't have to worry about it, as long as there's no real issue, together with the Simcha Bunim, which is that, really, even if there is an issue, it's not an issue. Even if there is an issue, that's just a point to work on. Every marriage has issues. Binyan adayad, you're always building. Every marriage has issues, but you have the mindset of, I want to build, I want to grow, we're going to work on it together. So now he feels ready. Kol sason, v'kol simcha, kol chatan, v'kol kala, they're ready to get married. Baruch Hashem. He's ready to propose. Don't worry, it's going to go well. It's going to go well. I'm about to say, he's about to propose. It's mamash, the day of the proposition. We didn't do Dor Yesharim. No! What's Dor Yesharim? Dor Yesharim is genetic testing. Especially in the Ashkenazi world, Ashkenazi and Ashkenazi, there are certain genetic diseases which, if you get married to each other, then there's a chance. Sometimes it's a 25% chance if they both are carriers, then there's a chance where the child will have a severe disease like Tay-Sachs. There are others as well. And it's not recommended to even start going out with someone who that has that issue ahead of time. And therefore, really before this whole story started, it would have been advisable for him to have done genetic testing. If you do it through Dor Yerushalayim, you get a number. You don't know what you have. You just get a number. And she gets a number. And you phone Dor Yerushalayim, this shidduch has been suggested. Are we a good match? They say yes. It could be that you're a carrier, it could be she's a carrier, no one knows. But you know that you're a good match. There's another type of genetic testing where you know. Meaning you get all, it's not Dor Yerushalayim, but rather you just do it through the kupa, just to the clinic. And then you know everything you need to know, and you're able to say, I'm clean. And then you don't have to worry at all, you don't have to check other people. Once you know that you're clean, then it's okay. Or you know that you're not. And then you have to ensure that they've done testing as well, because you have to check out. That's a prerequisite. You don't want to get into a shidduch where you're going to have such major issues. In this particular case, it was very awkward because they're ready to get engaged. So they went to Dor Yerushalayim and they said, how long does it take? 3 weeks. Are you kidding me? 3 weeks? Well, actually, it's Chol HaMoed next week and we don't work in Chol HaMoed. So it's going to be 4 weeks. No, is there anything we can do? Say, well, if you want to pay 1.5 times the amount, then we have a 3-day service. Cost more because we put everything else on hold and we just do your thing. Like Corona had that as well, no? And you pay a little extra, you can get a 3-day service. They said, we'll take it. They did the correct thing, but they were clear. But it would be better if they would have done Dor Yerushalayim ahead of time, yeah.
How do we know the difference between the being a willing to change decision and a red line, both for them and for yourself? Because if it is a red line, but it's indicative that it looks like they're not good at being willing to change, how can you find out good with yourself and with them?
So a red line is in a very specific area, which is something that they're aware of and you're aware of way ahead of time. And it's something very unique and specific, which that you'll know and you're willing to live with. Meaning, she's like a super clean freak, then you say, okay, it's not going to be easy, but we'll get along. That's in a very specific area. What I'm talking about is where, like, her opinion is the right opinion on every topic. On every topic, she's always right. Now, it's fine for you to say she's always right. It's not fine for her to say she's always right.
Just ask more than one thing, basically.
Ask in different areas and see what her opinion is on certain matters. Yeah, exactly. An example that I gave of Haredi versus the Tzilumi, it could be that she would say, no, that's a red line for me, and that would be fine. But in many, many other areas, she's like willing to be his own. And you must check that you are as well, right? Obviously, this is going both ways. Everything that we've spoken about until now, everything that you're looking for in her, you have to ensure that you're at least that, right? To offer yourself to her to be at least on this level as well. Yeah, but that's an excellent point. Okay. I wanted just to, on that quote that we had of Simcha Cohen, I just wanted to read one line here in the Igros Moshe. The Igros Moshe's advice for Shidduchim. Now again, one could say that it's different in our era, and it may well be. It could be that in our era we're more picky. But I still believe this is the idea. And I believe that if a person has this mindset, then Shidduchim will be much easier for them, and marriage will be much easier for them. So it could be that people who say, I can't do that. I can't do that. I have to have all my checklists fulfilled before I get married. And some people, a person who feels that, it may be that they have to be true to themselves. Maybe. But this is a healthy mindset. Says the Igros Moshe, Yoradeya Chelek Aleph, Yodei Cherek Aleph, Simen Tzadi. Whatever he wrote until now is Midas Adin. Aval Lamaisa, Ein Ze Kedai La'asot, Ki Ein Lehitchakem Harbeh. Don't be too overthinking in this matter. Ha'isha Shemotat Chein B'mareha, as long as she's pleasant to you in the way that she looks. Uve Mishpachta, you get along with the family. V'shmota Tova, and you hear about her good things, she has good Midas. Vehi shomeret dat, and she keeps halacha. Yesh lismoch velisa ota. That's enough. You go along with her, basically. People say good things about her. That's enough. Get married to her, lisa ota, betikva shehi amezumeret lo min hashamayim. You hear that? Betikva. Right? And that's it. That's what you need to do, and you can hope that she's from Shemayim. Ve'ein tzarach livchon ota mitchila. Don't test her in different areas. Ve'gam shelo yo'il. And the truth is that it won't even help you. Even if you try and test it, it won't help you, right? You don't know, all those testings, nothing healthy comes out of it at all. But tamim tiyeh em Hashem elokecha ketiv. Tamim tiyeh, if you're doing it from an authentic place, you've done your basic background checks, you see that you basically get along, she's not a very stubborn person, your red lines don't conflict, you can get married. And the truth is that you can get married with many, many people. And it's about making it work once you invest in it. Now, there's another interesting question, which is about is it opposites attract, or is it similar people attract? That's an interesting question. And regarding genetic dafka, opposites attract. Right, there, it's better not to have someone exactly the same. You can halakhically marry your first cousin. It's not always recommended. But as far as personality is concerned, then there are some traits which work well together. There are some that complement each other, and that some that conflict. And you can't really know ahead of time until you've interacted. There are some times when you meet each other, and like she is a bubbly personality, and you're quite reserved, and actually it works quite well. Because you're able to kind of calm her down when she gets overexcited, and she's able to give you a bit of enthusiasm about things which are important, and you work well as a team. There are some times where it causes a lot of friction. You get annoyed by her being bubbly and overexcited and talking to everyone that you walk past in the street, right? And she feels that you're cold and without emotions and dry. So there's no rule over here. There's no rule. It's more about the dynamic between you than it is about the personalities. Some personalities, even though they're totally opposing, but they work well and they complement. Some don't. There's no rule here. The kind of more easygoing you are and the ability to like accept other people, then it's likely that you'll be able to get on with almost anyone. The more kind of rigid you are in a sense, then it'll be harder. And there's no way of really knowing that until you actually meet and you see each other. But so that's one point. But as far as backgrounds are concerned, then this is not a rule at all. And I'm saying this as my wife is one of four, and we're the only one who's Ashkenazi. My wife's three Ashkenazi siblings, all married father. Right? So it can work well. It can work well, but to some degree it's setting up an extra barrier. When you come from a different background. And I don't mean just Ashkenazi Sephardi, it could be like very rich and very poor. Right? Or just totally, if there's some basic difference in the upbringings, it can work well. It's not necessarily a conflict. But it's often smoother when it's more similar backgrounds. There's less hurdles. There's things to overcome. If you marry someone from a totally different culture of yours, then there's a lot more that you need to do to get to really understand them. It's enough of a barrier just being a man and a woman. You know? There's enough there. To have an extra culture difference is something extra, but I would never rule it out. And there are many amazing marriages that are cross cultures and cross backgrounds, but it's an extra conflict. Which, if this is what's on offer, then go with it. You know, if that's what Shidduch was meant suggested, then go with it. Well, I wouldn't hold back because of that. But at the same time, if there's two being offered, then look for one which is more similar background, because you're more likely to. Personality is much more important than background. Now, the fact that you get on well is much, much more important than if you're from the same Eidah. But if you can get both, then it's just smoother. Just things are much smoother. Baruch Hashem, they got engaged. Kol sason v'kol simcha, kol chatan v'kol kala. I'm just going to give now the advice that Yitzchak gave to his friends afterwards from all his going out and all his experience. Just a quick list of all the tips that he gave to his friends afterwards. Number one, you shouldn't go out too often, meaning the dates should be spaced. If you go out day after day, you don't have time to process what just happened. You don't have time to like emotionally connect to the date. You need a few days to like let it sink, think what you think about it, reflect on it. Sometimes it's challenging when you're in different towns and like when you travel just to go out for a few days. That doesn't always go so well, right? Like you sometimes make a decision which is like too quick and it's a bit forced. It's much healthier if you have the opportunity to like meet, wait 4 or 5 days, meet a second time, wait another week, wait another time. Like, you know, frequent enough that you're keeping it going, but not so close that you didn't have time to process everything. That's point number one. Point number two is that it's, as I spoke beforehand about the like not meeting in hotel lobbies, so you should meet in as many different settings as you can, because then you get a more bigger picture of who the person is. Right? If you meet them in their home with their siblings and see how they interact with their siblings, if you meet them with your friends, their friends, go do different activities together. Right, but sometimes walk it. Go for a walk and like in a market and like go shopping for Shabbos together. Do like normal things that normal people would do, just to see them how they are in different settings. And that's like a more authentic way of relating and understanding who they are. Point number three is, be very honest with who you are and don't portray yourself to be who you want to be, but rather who you are right now. You can say what your aspirations are, but also be honest with who you are now, because it can be a mekach taos. Like you make out as if you're someone who you're not, and then she buys into that. And then later on, when when you express your real personality, she's very disappointed. She feels cheated. She feels betrayed. So be honest. You don't have to be honest in the first date and like share every, you know, grime detail about you. But at the same time, like as things are getting more serious, then you should be open with things. And I want to add something. If there are things of your past which you're not proud of, but you're sure that they do not affect you in any way today, you do not have to mention them ever. Ever. It's inappropriate to mention them. Because it's not part of you now. It's not relevant to who you are. You've moved beyond that. And it can cause tension unnecessarily. If there's something of your past which you're not proud of and you're still struggling with on some degree, it's important to mention. At some point, not straight away. Later on, it's important to mention. If it's something you're still struggling with, then she has to know before you decide to get engaged. That's an important chiluk. If it was unpleasant but you've overcome it, you don't have to mention it. But you have to be sure. I'm not talking about you overcame it like 5 minutes ago and like nothing just happened. But like, I'm talking about like a year or two has passed already and you're pretty secure in who you are now. Like you, that was something of your past. It's not no longer connected to who you are. You don't have to mention it. You've moved on. That's not you. She's marrying the you today. She's not marrying the you of when you were younger. You don't have to mention it. But if it's something which you're still struggling with, you have to mention it. Okay. Great. Baruch Hashem. They got engaged. We're all invited to the wedding. Okay, there's other points here, but we've mentioned the major aspect of them. Okay, one last idea from this page. There's different communities work differently regarding this matter. How are you introduced? Is there a go-between? This is an important topic. So different cultures work differently. A healthy way of it working out is you're introduced through mutual friends. Like one of your friends has already got engaged and one of her friends got engaged and it's a mutual friend. Because that's someone who really knows you and really knows her and thinks you're appropriate. Shadchanim are very good. Some are very good. One of the boys had told me that, that where he lives, there's two shadchanim in the he was working with. One of them is paid by the community. And she's paid to work. She has a salary. It's not commission. And the other one's paid by commission. He said the one who's paid by the community, and she makes excellent choices. Not so often. But the suggestions that she makes are bang on. The other one works for commission, offering him all the time everything. Whoever it is. It's very interesting, eh? You understand why? So, Shadchanim work very well. But like, check in with them why they suggested it. Why do you think we're a good match? You're both 24. Thank you. Check in, ask them why they think that it's a good match. Now, it's healthy at the beginning. And again, it depends on society, which community you're in and everything. But it helps at the beginning not to be in touch directly, but to be in touch via a third person. It can be the Shadchan, or it can be a mutual friend. I've been in between when I wasn't the Shadchan. Meaning, the boy or the girl knew me, the boy knew me, and they said to me, will you be the go-between for us? Now, what's the value of a go-between? After one or two times, you're usually pretty sure if you're going to carry on or not. You're not sure if you're going to get engaged. That takes a few more. But if it's not meant to be, you can usually tell after one or two times. And it's really awkward. Right? After two times, you want to tell them no, and often she wants to carry on and you don't, or the other way around. It's awkward. And if you have a go-between, where it's the first couple of times, where it's accepted that like the information or the discussion is going to go through the go-between, it's much more pleasant. You say what you say to the go-between, they say what they say to the go-between, and then they get back to you. That's point number one. That if it's not going to work out, it's much more pleasant and much more yafeh. It's not to be there. That's point. Point number two is, often people are small-minded and quick to decision without having discussed something through. And they're rash in their decision. It's not meant to be. Why? Did you discuss that? And one particular shidduch I want to share with you. A friend of mine, he was a contemporary of mine, and he asked me to be the go-between. And he phoned me after the third or fourth date that I was the go-between him, and he said to me, I'm calling it off. And I said, how come? And he told me his reason. And it sounded like a reason, but it didn't seem justified enough to me, especially when I heard from her perspective how good it was. And I said to him, I spoke to her, and she felt that there's still a lot of potential, and that topic can be discussed a little further. And he said to me, no, like, I feel it's not meant to be. And then he says to me this line, if Hashem doesn't want it to be, it's not meant to be. Hashem doesn't want it to be. How do you know Hashem doesn't want it to be? I said, well, what percentage do you feel that it could still work out? So he said to me, 1%. And then he said to me, because I want to emphasize his point, 99% not. And he wanted to emphasize his point. Today they're married, living in Rabbi Shemesh. They didn't have children for a number of years, but now they have children. Like, what happened in that conversation? He took something out of context, out of proportion, made a big deal of it. Just by the way, this particular person, he married the girl. He doesn't know what number it was, because he stopped counting after 100. After 100, he stopped counting. So we spoke it through, and I said, you know what? 1% is a chance. It's a chance. Give it another try, and I will speak it through. And I heard his issue. I rated it back to her. It was a non-issue from her perspective. They had an open conversation about it the next time. He realized that he'd misunderstood the situation. And they carried on. And they're happily married. Happily married. Sometimes a go-between is helpful, not just to let down, but even to empower. There's sometimes misunderstandings which are very easy to resolve. Very easy. If you play up the right things, and you're honest, but you mention the correct things, then you can really save a marriage. Save a potential marriage. And one last point, I just want to talk about communication. It's important to show her that you're interested in her. And it's a little awkward from Tzniut's perspective. Because what can you say and what can't you say on a communication level that let her know that you are interested and you want to take it somewhere, but at the same time not to be too personal? So discussing her appearance is out of bounds. You can't discuss what she's wearing or how she looks. Those things are not tsanua. There's not tsanua thing to say. Maybe later on, you could say a very general, you look lovely. You look really nice. Like a very general kind of, and she should say thank you. She'll blush a little bit, but you'll move on. You'll move on. So that's a bit inappropriate. Definitely at the beginning. It's very appropriate when you're married. Super appropriate. Daily, hourly. But when you're going out, it's not appropriate. However, don't take the other extreme now. Don't say, well, that's inappropriate, so I'm not going to say anything. It's very healthy to compliment her on her opinions, on what she shares. Say, wow, that's really interesting. I never thought of that. Wow, that's so intelligent. Like, where did you get that from? That was it. To say this, right, you'll find the right line that makes sense to you. Right? But to say things where you show her that, to show her that you're enamored by her and you're impressed by what she's saying and who she is. If she tells you a story which brings out good midas, and you mention that, you point that out, you say, "Wow, I wish I could be like that. That's an unbelievable act of chesed. Like, I hope I can do that as well." And those kind of compliments that you're giving her are very appropriate. You can certainly compliment her on her viewpoints, on things she's done that she shares with you. And that's very appropriate. And it's very important too as well. Because boys don't often express what they're feeling in the relationship. They often are more like private about that. And it gives the girl an insecurity. Is it going well? Is it not going well? And it's not inappropriate to share positive things about her. To compliment her, to give her words of affection, within reason, are very appropriate. To give empathy when she shares things that are hard, that's what Yitzchak learned on the first time from his sister. To give empathy, like, wow, that sounds really rough, or you went through a hard day. Those types of things where you show that you care, you show you're interested, and to actually give compliments and words of affection where it's within boundaries. Now, what the boundaries are, every person has their own boundaries. You know, some people might be comfortable to talk a little bit about appearance, but wouldn't go too far in that area. But as far as like things that she says that you want to share with her, that's very appropriate. And something which people don't often think of. They don't often think to give empathy. They don't often think to give compliments and to give words of admiration. And it's very appropriate to do that. And it creates a much deeper connection. If you say to her at the end of the date, I really enjoyed our date this evening, I'm looking forward to next time. Right? It leaves her on a high. It leaves her feeling good. If you don't say that, then it leaves her with this nervousness of like, was it good? Wasn't it good? She's waiting for the phone call of the go-between. How did it go? How did it go? Like, let her know that you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, let her know. Let her know. like build her, really build her. That would also help you in the shidduchim. As well as it being an objectively good thing to do and a true thing to do, it'll also help you. It will help her feel, this is the one I want. He's someone who cares, he's someone who shares, he's someone who has empathy, he's someone who, it's a good skill throughout marriage. But by having an open communication, you'll get to a stage where you feel you know them. You feel you get to know each other. And then you'll feel this comfortableness with each other. And when you've shared positive things throughout your going out, it will build an affinity towards one another that will enable your final decision to be much more clear. That's what I have to share. I'm open to any questions, if there are any questions about shidduchim. Everyone's ready? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Have you mentioned about how a marriage anyone could work? But I'm just curious, like, how does that relate to the Gemara? The Gemara is that talking about a person being designated for another person. So, what does that mean? I guess.
Right. So, there are certain shidduchim which HaKadosh Baruch Hu designs that you could have, and those are the ones He'll send your way. There are ones which are not designed for you, and He won't send them your way. If someone was sent to you as a shidduch, and you used logical, down-to-earth guidelines of how to make a decision, then that's the beshet. If you were being rash in your decision, or you were doing it based just on looks, or doing it just based on money, or any of those things, you know, then it might not be necessary. But if you're doing it based on like normal Torah guidelines, then it's a beshet. But you have to work for a beshet. You have to put an effort for the Beshert to Beshert. Beshert does not mean it's a given and you don't have to put any effort. Beshert still means that there's potential for it to work here. And our emunah is, this is an emunah point, that if you were doing everything logically and in a healthy manner, then the person who sent to you that fulfills the guidelines, the criteria, and you work on it, that's potentially, it could be the one. There may be surprises. And maybe you find out that she was abused as a girl, and there are things now which, like, she's not able to communicate at all in an emotional way. Or chas v'shalom, you're not able to have children. There are some things which are surprises which you weren't expected. Then maybe not. Right? But at the time you're making the decision, with the decision you make, the mindset is always, if this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent to me, and it feels natural, I'm able to communicate well with them, they don't cross any red lines for me, we have the same basic hashkafa going forward, then that is the bishop. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent you. That's what makes it bishop. They send it to you. And if there's challenges, you put effort in and you work on it. You just remind me of one thing. I just want to add one point. There was someone who learned here the year below me in Cambry Avenue. And he got engaged. Later on, after yeshiva, he got engaged. And his cousin was learning in the yeshiva at the time. And I was close to his cousin. And his cousin told me the following story. His cousin said to me, you know, I was shocked when he got engaged to her. I said, why? He says, because she wears pants. And this boy is a very frum boy. And it doesn't make sense that he would marry a girl who wears pants. This boy went on to Gris Kola. He was a frum boy. So I said to his cousin, oh. I said, but then you know what? I confronted him. His cousin told me. And I confronted him about it. His cousin's younger, right? But he still confronted him about it. And I said, and what did he say? He said to me that when I was going out with her, I saw the reason why she wears pants is because the community that she lives in, the society that she lives in, that's the given, that's the standard. That's not her. And I could see she was extremely growth orientated. She had tremendous Yirat Shamayim. And she just wasn't in a society or a community where that was something even thought of. And the reason why she wore pants was just because that was part of society. And when we met, it was a genius of a person who introduced it, right? To see that beyond that. But it was someone who was a mutual friend of both families. And like saw that they were like really on the same like authentic Yirat Shamayim path. And when they met and they started speaking about it, she was very willing to fully embrace a halachic lifestyle. Just that wasn't the community that she was living in until then. That's why I wanted to add that sometimes when you meet someone, their religious level isn't necessarily the same as yours. It could be higher, it could be lower. It's not so important. What's important is the direction they're taking. If there's someone who technically comes from a frumer family than you and a frumer high school than you and the frumest, but like she's lost interest in it to some degree. And she's still doing everything, but as far as her like the gleam in her eye of like Yiddishkeit isn't there anymore, and that's a person perhaps on the way down. And even though technically now they're higher than you and you're excited about that because you want to marry someone who's going to take you frumer and frumer, but they're higher than you now, but It could go this way. Chas v'shalom. And this friend of mine, he saw the exact opposite, which was a genius. He saw someone who right now technically was lower than him in religious practice, but she, in her desire, was on the way up. And when she came to Gris Kollel, she didn't wear pants anymore. Everything was fine. And they carried on, and he got a job as a rabbi, and also in some other professional. He's like, he works part day, and he teaches part day, and it's amazing. So that's just a point also I wanted to add, that a person shouldn't get stuck on an externality, and even religious practice could be an externality. What's more important is religious direction. Okay, so I'll add that. Yes, Shalom.
Back in the stage of finding out if you're comfortable with the third person, Ruby was talking about, you know, expressing empathy by making the right noises at the right time.
It's so funny. Sometimes I actually laugh in the middle. Because it's just so amusing how... You have to be authentic as well. You have to actually listen. Right? You can't just make noise. Because sometimes you make the wrong noise and it's really awkward. Oh, sorry. Ah. You have to know.
With that being the case, and, you know, that being true as it is, how are you supposed to find out about each other as people if, you know, you're just kind of making the right noise at the right time?
Yeah, no. So it's good initially, but as I said, like in the next day, then he started opening up conversations which are more getting into the depth of who they are. You don't do that your whole marriage. You do it at the beginning, so then she feels that you're interested in her, then you just open the window for a few minutes just to make sure you're on the same page, and then you close the window again and you the rest of your life. I'm joking, but it's not such a joke. Like most of the time you just listen. I know you learn a lot about her. You learn a tremendous amount about her. Yeah, again and again and again. You learn a lot. But what's really important to her is that you care and you're taking an interest. That's really important. So it's actually answering a real need. It's not a joke. It's answering a real need that she has. Her real need is that you care for her and you're interested in her. And you're giving her empathy at the time she needs empathy, or you're giving her advice rarely when she wants advice. It's usually empathy. But now and then there's advice that's asked for. And when she sees that you're really there for her and you're investing in her and you're caring for her and I'm not joking about it, but you're actually like making the right noise at the right time, meaning you really are with her, that's answering a deepest need that she has. That's an authentic thing to do. It's not a joke. You have to be also willing, and she has to be willing as well, that when you do have something you really want to share, that you ask permission and you say, is it okay if I take the microphone for 10 minutes? It's something that's on my heart and I want to share. And if you've always listened to her, she'll be very willing to let you talk for a while. Because she sees that you're really, really authentic. You're not like hijacking the conversation. You listen to her normally and you ask permission to speak. She'll be very willing to listen to what you have to say. And you can share openly and... Make sense?
You have less permission.
It's better. If you don't ask permission, then she feels... It depends what you're saying, right? If you're saying something which is a bit like... could cause a bit of friction or tension, or you're saying a different opinion so you know what her opinion is, and by asking her permission, then she's more willing to hear what you have to say.
Right, but let's say like the common denominator was, let's say, books or something, and she was talking about how she knows this author and, you know, how eloquently he writes and whatnot. And you want to express the same type.
80-20. 80-20. Give her 80% of the talk and you can add in about 20% of the talk and you'll be okay. You don't have to ask permission there. That's like it's a small topic. But if it's something which is a crucial topic, something which is like going to be, you know, like it's a conversation that you're going to be having, like something which is going to be changing the way that your relationship is, or like talking about a shkafic point, which is important, especially at the beginning, right? When you're still discovering each other, then it's worthwhile asking permission.
So to clarify, this is in the dating stage.
No, it's also later on when it's a topic which is a heavy topic or an important topic. The thing I want to discuss about our children's education, it's worthwhile introducing it with permission. That's already later on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't have to, but it works better. It works better when like she's been open to the conversation. Okay, any other questions? Okay, we will be zoche to everyone get married at a time. And now everyone in this room now will be able to get married earlier than they otherwise would have, hopefully. Because if you have a healthy hashkafa, and even if you don't yet have hashkafa, but you're aware of healthy hashkafas, and then when you're in a situation, you say, wait, I need to catch myself here, I want to speak it through with someone, and you speak it through with someone, you can save yourself a lot of heartache. You don't have to go out with over 100 girls. You could probably meet the right one early on when they were sent to you at the right time. Okay, we finished? You finished?